Hi there, it's Melvin. Just wanted to take a moment to thank the team over at Thrizer for supporting this month's podcast sessions. Thrizer is a payment platform that you have to check out if you are a private pay therapist and accepting out-of-network benefits. It basically helps clients save on therapy upfront. Thrizer can help verify a client's out-of-network benefit ahead of the first session so that they get transparency up front on what their out-of-pocket costs will be. I'll tell you more about Thrizer here in the middle of our session, but if you go to sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, you actually and then enter the code STC upon sign up, you get your first $2,500 in fees waived. Again, that's over at sellingthecouch.com/Thrizer, and be sure to enter the promo code STC. So we'll jump right into today's podcast session. Hello, hello. Welcome to session 78 of Selling the Couch. Hope you are doing really well. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's session. We've had family in town, family that I'm super close to, so we have been exploring every corner of Pennsylvania, from the mountains and the waterfalls up in the northwest, all the way to Philly, doing a bunch of like scavenger hunts throughout Philly to learn all the historical stuff. It's been a ton of fun, but I am a little exhausted, I have to say. I don't know if you remember, this was a way long time ago, but session 12 of the podcast was all about how to leverage Facebook ads. I've always been curious about Facebook. One is because there are so many people on Facebook, and well, as of this recording, over a billion people. In fact, I read somewhere that Facebook is now the largest country in the world. That's pretty crazy. And I read this other stat that one out of every five website visits in the US is on Facebook. So session 12 of the Selling the Couch podcast was all about how to leverage Facebook ads. And it was with Val Shoopman, who's run Facebook ad campaigns for some big time entrepreneurs. Today, I wanted to have a clinician on who is using Facebook ads, and more specifically, using the boost feature where they take certain blog posts and they boost that, and that exposes that blog post to a lot more people. But more importantly than just talking about how to boost blog posts, I wanted to see how they were using it to get clients for their practice. My guest today is Michelle Lewis. Michelle is a member of the Selling the Couch Facebook community, where she's given so much valuable information. Michelle, thank you for that. She's a licensed clinical social worker out in Salt Lake City, Utah, and her focus is on the bariatric surgery process and also on weight loss and eating concerns. And her website is at slweightlosscounseling.com. Michelle has a really cool website, so you should definitely check it out. But today we're going to dive really deep into Facebook boosting and how Michelle uses the combination of blogging on her private practice website as well as Facebook to get more visitors and also to get more clients for her practice, which has been very successful, the process and the practice itself. Before we get to today's session, I wanted to take a moment to thank the awesome folks at Therapy Partner. Therapy Partner is a all-in-one private practice management software that was created by a psychologist for our field. It includes everything from the ability for clients to schedule appointments all the way to you being having the ability to write case notes and then track your revenue as well. You can learn more at sellingthecouch.com/therapypartner, and that gives you a free trial to check it out. So in today's session, we're going to cover a number of things, including how does Michelle find blogging inspiration for her practice, and when she has written blog posts throughout these years, which of the blog posts has done really well. But more importantly, we're going to talk about the themes. Why does she think those specific blog posts did so well? And then how does Michelle go about figuring out which blog posts that she will boost? So as you may or may not know, you have to pay Facebook, usually just a small amount of money to run these ads, because that's sort of the trade-off of getting your blog post or your content in front of a larger audience. But how does Michelle figure out which ones that she will boost so that she's spending her money judiciously? So here's my conversation with Michelle Lewis from slweightlosscounseling.com. Hi, Michelle. Welcome to Selling the Couch.
Hi, Melvin. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm looking forward to our conversation. I feel like every time you have posted about boosting your blog posts on Facebook and seeing the results that you've had and the people that you've been able to connect with, it just made me so excited. So I'm looking forward to you sharing what you've learned along the way.
Great. I'm looking forward to sharing it with you as well.
So I wanted to kind of just start very narrow, because I just thought, you know, I visited your website multiple times, and one of the things that's always resonated with me is how clear your website is, and how, like, you know exactly the population that you work with. Like, it's very clear. So I wanted to ask, how did you actually narrow down the population that you work with?
That is a great question. So I worked as a therapist in residential treatment with adolescents for many years, and ended up doing a lot of substance abuse work. But it really burned me out. Just working in round-the-clock care, is very tough on me personally. And so I ended up taking a job with an insurance company that had a corporate wellness program, and worked as a therapist, kind of assessing their members for barriers to wellness goals. Wellness is something that personally resonates with me, and ended up doing a lot of work with their members around barriers to weight loss. As you know, I quickly identified most of it was emotional. And so I ended up using a lot of my substance abuse background and throwing in other things that I found helpful, and really saw those members make great strides in their goals that they had never been able to achieve before. And I thought to myself, you know, I was building this fledgling practice at the time, taking any client who would come see me, and really started targeting those clients because I loved working with them. And the more I worked with them, the more passionate I became, the more focused I became, and the more effective I became with them. So it really narrowed down to me doing just that work and love it. And then I kind of expanded more to food addiction and binge eating disorder, and that's where my sweet spot has been.
You took inspiration, you took a background and experience that you had, and you were able to, like, nuance it, right? And find your passion in it. It's so cool to hear. Like, it's always amazing to me how folks use their past experiences to guide their private practices.
Right. And, you know, I mean, I think that that's one thing that comes up with a lot of therapists is, you know, how do I niche myself? Well, what I say time and time again is, which clients do you find yourself really looking forward to working with? And which clients are you watching the clock to kind of count down how much time you have left in the session? Because when you find yourself looking forward to those clients, that's your niche, and figure out what it is that you're passionate about and wrap it all in together. And work doesn't feel like work at that point.
So I don't know if this is a silly question, but, like, when you're thinking about, like, niching in that way, do you think of, like, specific clients and their qualities, or do you think more about the presenting concerns that they came in with, or both?
Both. So my ideal client is a woman 25 to 55, although I do have clients on the outskirts of that age range. And I do work with men too. I'm not sexist. But generally with this issue, women are more likely to contact me. And my clients are all very high functioning. They're all professionals. They're pretty successful in other areas of their life. And so this is the area of food is the one area where they can't seem to get that traction that they get in other areas of their life. And that's my ideal client. So, so not only do I target the issue, I'm speaking directly to those people.
And it sounds like part of it was just based on the clients that you saw is how you figured out that that's the population that you wanted to work with. And it also helped you like craft a lot of the narrative and the ways that you talk to them.
Exactly. Yes.
So I wanted to, make that transition because I wanted to spend a good amount of time just talking about Facebook, blogging, the intersection of both of those things. So just starting out, like, how do you actually, knowing the client that you want to work with, how do you find blogging inspiration for that population?
Well, I read a lot. I read the books that I think my ideal client would be reading. I read lots of books around diets. I read lots of books around binge eating. I make it a point because it's a passion of mine. I am interested in that, but I also make it a point to be well informed on the things that they're reading and debunking the myths around some of the things that they're reading. And so as I'm exposed to all of these pieces, I'm just taking mental notes, and I with my blogging, I tend to binge blog, so I'll write several articles at a time and schedule them out. And in between that, I'm just writing vague notes about things that I might want to hit on in blogs. I have post-its all over my nightstand and in my office.
I'm a post-it note guy as well.
Yeah. And then, I also keep, if I'm in front of my computer, I have a Word document that I keep my blog articles in and keep track of the ones that I've published. And then I just have different ideas that I have floating in there and then kind of go through and put my spin on it and add in some tips and tricks and things like that. And so I just get inspiration through all of the things that I learn personally and professionally.
You said something which is so small, which is powerful. Like, it kind of blew my mind. Like, you read the stuff that your ideal client would be reading, right? Because I can totally see how, if you're in that world, how that would serve as just a great inspiration for things that you write about.
Mm-hmm. And, I've read books that my clients recommend and things like that. So I also have sticky notes of books that I need to buy. they'll say in session, oh, I'm reading this book. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll be reading that book too. Mm. So that's really exposes me to all different sorts of ideas. And I particularly like reading things that I don't agree with, because then it gives me that kind of adversarial approach to debunking some of the things that I think actually cause more damage in our society as people are reading these things and believing them.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So as you're reading these books or reading these articles, what are you generally looking for? Are you kind of looking at more of the title, the content itself, like the different sections, or more just looking at, areas of those books or articles that inspire you?
I look at all of it. Mm. And just like when we read anything, certain nuggets will pop out at us while others just don't really land. And so those nuggets are what I take and run with.
This might be more of like a thought-provoking question, but like, how do you learn? How did you learn to trust your own intuition through that process? Trusting that, hey, this resonates for me, and I can hold on to that, as opposed to, I don't know if I should write on that.
Someone on one of the groups posted something about, blog articles, and I'm afraid of what people will think, and I'm afraid it won't be a good article. And I write about everything, and I know that some of them are going to be hits and some of them are going to be misses, and even the misses might provoke something in someone. And so I actually just I just write and I just figure, well, it's either going to be a great article or it's going to be a so-so filler article. But either way, it's something that I feel like I need to write. So I do.
So I think there's something good in that, which is that you just gave yourself permission to put content out there. And it's not like the fear of needing to get it perfect or the fear of like, or wanting it to go viral or anything like that. Just so that's a big part of it.
And honestly, you know, that's never been something that I've looked at as, you know, wanting to go viral or wanting it to be big. Honestly, as I'm blogging, I'm really just looking at SEO content. So, you know, while I do want to speak to my ideal client, I'm also making sure that I am putting in the keywords that I know that client will be looking for. And, you know, keeping the content on my website fresh so that I can maintain my Google ratings.
Yeah. So I guess on that level, maybe as you're scanning, it sounds like maybe as you're scanning these different types of content, you're maybe looking for keywords that you can potentially put into your own blog posts. That would help those blog posts rank higher.
Exactly.
You know, and just in general, like thinking about all of the different types of blog posts that you've written, when you've written them, what type of posts have done well? And I know that might be kind of a broad question, but you know what I mean by that is, have you found like checklists or like long form or narrative based, like what type of, in general, what's done well, or like speaking about a certain trend, for example, I guess for your niche?
Sure. So media interviews always do very well. So, you know, I've had the opportunity to do several local television interviews and radio interviews, and those always do very well. But as far as blog posts that I've done, I think that the more emotional pieces that I have shared have really been the ones that have been the most effective. The number one blog post that I have ever had was actually talking about my own experience with food addiction and binge eating. And it was amazing how it took off. And I did do a little bit of boosting of it on Facebook, but I had so many shares. I had so many comments. I mean, and even people who didn't necessarily comment on Facebook, you know, reached out to me and, you know, said, wow, thank you for sharing that. So I think that, you know, as therapists, we're so afraid of being personal in our writing that we end up making it a little bit too clinical, but actually allowing that human element in a little bit. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to go into a ton of detail about my own personal journey, but even just sharing kind of what makes you passionate about the work that you do and being able to connect with clients on that level really normalizes their experience so that they feel less shame about it.
There's like a unique perspective also of being a clinician that has a specialty in that, but actually having gone through it as well, right? Like you have the practical plus the academic and the clinical training.
Sure.
You know, you said a couple of different things on there. So you said part of the reason why, oh, by the way, what was the name of that blog article, like the title?
I Am the Face of Food Addiction.
Oh, wow. What a great title.
Yeah. Thank you.
Within that blog post, there was personal elements about your struggle. Was there anything else that you feel like within that blog post that maybe did well? Like, did you offer any sort of like advice, tips, like anything like that? Or
hope. I think that was the big draw, is that people could feel hope from someone who's come out on the other end of that. And because I think that when you're in the midst of that struggle, you feel so alone, you feel hopeless about things ever being able to change, and just being able to have that experience and that connection with someone who, you know, I mean, obviously all of these people, well, not all of them, a lot of them had already been following my blog and following me on Facebook, and to solidify that piece of credibility, I think was huge.
Just going back, you said one of the things that also did well was media interviews. So tell me a little bit more about, like, so I get the concept of media interviews, but how does that translate? Like, do you put that on content on your website, or how does that usually work?
I do. So I have a media page on my website where I have all of the different interviews that I've done listed. And then I also create a blog post out of it. So I'll put in the video Some of the local media outlets, some of the television outlets will give you a clip, or you're able to embed a clip, and some of them you just have to put in a link. But I will put those in a blog post. I will write a little bit about it with some SEO keywords so that they'll come up. And then I will take that blog post and I will post it on Facebook. So the difference, I think, with that is, versus just posting the interview directly from the media outlet, is that it gets people driving to my website, and that helps with the call to action for potential clients. So I found that to be the most effective.
You said something about SEO. So how do you figure out what, like, so how do you, for example, take a media interview, and then how do you figure out what keywords you might want to rank for? Do you do research, or how does that generally work?
Well, generally, it just depends on what the interview is about. So if it's an interview on binge eating disorder, I'll put, you know, here's my latest interview on binge eating disorder, and just put a couple of sentences about it. Or if it's emotional eating, or if it's barriers to weight loss, or whatever the interview is about, I will tie that into the keywords that I think the ideal client will be looking for.
I wanted to spend the good majority of the rest of our time talking all about Facebook and Facebook ads, because seriously, you're probably the one clinician that comes to my mind when I think of clinicians that are using Facebook ads really well. Like, you definitely come to mind. And I wanted to just start there. Like, tell us a little bit more about Facebook ads. Like, what made you even go into that realm and think about, you know, boosting posts and all of those things?
Honestly, I don't know. I've been doing it for quite a while. I actually don't do much of it at all anymore, because I have a pretty significant waiting list at this point. So I just don't pay for any sort of advertising for the most part. But it really started a couple of years ago. I expanded my practice to include other clinicians working for me. And so in an effort to fill their caseloads, I started just randomly boosting certain blog posts and you know, definitely with the media interviews, and had a lot of traction that way. And then one of the most effective things that I had done for a period of time, I was doing kind of a free consultation seminar. So, you know, where some clinicians will do a like free one-on-one consultation, that to me is not time effective. So I would set it up as a workshop, and I would set up an emotional eating workshop where I would go through kind of why we struggle with emotional eating, what happens in the brain, what behaviors we have that contribute to that. And then I would spend the last 10 minutes talking about how we treat it in our clinic, how we, you know, what to expect from therapy sessions, cost, so insurance questions, fee questions, all of those kinds of things. And it was tremendously effective. So I would have this workshop once a month, and I would boost it on Facebook. And so for about $100, I would generally get anywhere from 8 to 15 potential clients coming to this workshop. And of those people who attended, about half of them would end up making an appointment. So the ROI on that was astronomical.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's crazy ROI.
It was really, really great. And my time investment was minimal. So it ended up being a really great way to start building their caseloads. Now, I haven't done that for quite a long time, being pregnant, and I'm actually going back to a solo practice. So I'm really scaling everything down to simplify. But that was hands down the most effective thing I ever did to build this clinic.
So you're saying you're giving the talks and then boosting ads to... to get people in. So were they more like, so when you were inviting people into these workshops, was it like a blog post with the call to action, like attend the workshop at the end, or was it more like a straight ad for a workshop?
It was straight ad for a workshop, but I did it as a blog post. So okay. I put in the blog post, you know, we're having this workshop. it's free, come and learn about emotional eating. And then posting that on Facebook would boost that post. And there are a few things that I think trip people up when it comes to boosting a post on Facebook. One is, I don't have friends on Facebook. I only use it for professional purposes. And so I think that a lot of the time people will target friends of their Facebook page or people who like their Facebook page. And I think that that's too narrow of an audience. So I actually do it through targeting. So you create your audience through targeting, and I choose my ideal client: women who are 25 to 55 within 25 miles of my office. And then I use specific keywords that they would be using on Facebook or in Google: binge eating, weight loss, diet, body image, eating disorder.
How did you find those keywords? Like, was that based on just your initial research? Or?
Well, part of it is based on my research and what I know my ideal clients are looking at. Part of it is also based off of Facebook's, they have predetermined keywords.
Right.
So not all of the keywords that I would use are available in there, but those are just some of the ones that they do allow. And so then the other piece is setting a budget. Typically what I have found most effective is to set my budget lower initially, set it for a 7-day period of time. And then as it starts gaining traction, I actually add more and more money, because for some reason that just triggers them to boost it more. I don't know. I don't have any statistics on this, but just what I've noticed and how the trend goes, I end up with more people who are targeted than, if I gradually lead up to $100 versus if I start out with $100. So I don't know if that's some algorithm that they have to try and get people to add more money. But if you start out with a really small budget and add, it ends up being much more effective than if you start out with a big budget, because then they'll want you to add more and more money off of that big budget, not necessarily a small budget, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I never even realized that.
So yeah. It was just something I happened to notice one day.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why that would happen. So you said 7 days, and then how much do you generally, what's the general range of what you budget per day?
So I start out with about $20, and I budget about $100 for the 7 days. Okay. Sometimes I have done more. So if I have, let's say in the past, if I've had a workshop scheduled and I haven't quite had as many people as I would like to see register for that, because what you also have to consider is with a free workshop, you're going to have a ton more people register than show up. So I always overbooked those, and knowing that people just aren't going to show up. So if, let's say, it's 2 days before the workshop and I've only had 10 people register, I might throw out a lot more money. Mm-hmm. You can always pause it at any time too. So that's one feature that if you're watching how much money is going and you're starting to feel uncomfortable, you can stop it at any time.
Right. So do you set it up through your business page, or you go through Power Editor to do this, or how to?
Through my business page.
Okay. Sounds good. Well, I mean, I think there's a peace of mind knowing that you can pause it whenever you need
to. Yes, you can pause it anytime you want to. So, I mean, I definitely wouldn't put, more money than you feel comfortable with. But what you also have to recognize too, someone, I think I was mentioning to you earlier, someone mentioned on one of the groups on Facebook this morning, I can boost my post for $20, but that seems like a lot of money. And when you look at the world of advertising, Facebook is cheap advertising. Mm-hmm. Very cheap advertising, where you are able to really tap in to your ideal client, where with Google Ads, you're not. You can't target women 25 to 55 with AdWords, And so $20 is nothing with advertising, because if you think about, let's say you spend $50 and you get one client who comes for one session, you've already more than made up that investment. So you have to kind of think in the long term. I also think it's really important to look at, you know, one of the other pieces that I've noticed, I'll have people follow me for a long time before they make an appointment. I've had clients who contact me and ask me questions, and I don't hear from them for 6 months to a year because they're not ready to pull the trigger on it. And so even if you don't get that direct conversion from clients, you're on their radar at that point, and it might happen down the road.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Like, to really look at it as a kind of a long-term plan, as opposed to, I think, what many of us, we think it's like, oh my gosh, I can't get this person, like, or I don't get it. It's not worth the money I'm putting in.
Right.
So then with those posts themselves, do you create a graphic or anything around that? Like, you know, like when it shows up on Facebook, or what do you generally do?
I generally just use the same picture that I have tied to my blog post. Okay. So whatever that picture is, I have several in rotation that I've purchased, and just kind of use whatever picture seems to fit. But otherwise, I don't add any other graphics.
Cool. That's actually nice to hear, because, you know, I know that adding, you know, like using Canva or something to create those graphics, it looks cool, but it can definitely take extra time.
Well, and the other thing that you have to think about too is if you use something like Canva and you put words on the graphic, they won't boost your post if it takes up more than, I think, 20% of the graphic.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about. They also are very worried about certain words that you use. Like, I can never boost a post that has weight loss in it. Mm. I can never boost a picture that has weight loss or a scale or anything related to weight loss in it. So for those posts, I generally just use my picture, my profile picture. Mm. But, you know, there are a few rules around all that. And someone posted something about, I can't remember what group it was on the other day, but all of the things that you need to know about posts on Facebook, things that would trigger that response of not boosting them. I mean, things as simple as a question mark. It's very odd. I had an article a while back that said, you know, why choose a counselor for overeating? ? And they said that it was defamatory. And I was like, No, pretty sure it's not. I dropped the question mark and they accepted the post. So, you know, I mean, it was just, it's a weird kind of arbitrary algorithm that they use, but you can talk to them about it, but they don't budge.
That's crazy. Yeah, I know, like, on a related note, I heard that now, like, during daytime hours, Facebook actually has customer service now for their ads.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a lot of information, and I think my head is kind of spinning with all sorts of different ideas. Thank you so much for doing this. I know for me, like, this is like a world that's now been open to me. I've been thinking a lot about Facebook ads, and I think this conversation has definitely motivated me to continue to pursue them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for having me on. I think the one last thing that I want to share is making sure that you have a call to action in your post. Mm. So, you know, if it's an article that you write, I generally leave a sentence at the bottom that says something like, you know, if this feels like you, or if you feel like you need additional help in this area, give us a call, kind of a thing. And that helps translate into more traffic too.
Yeah. So it's a call to action, but it's like it's a invitation more than a, like, you need to do this kind of feel.
Right. And, you know, that's my approach with clients in the first place. I never push. It's never sales pitchy. It's always like, hey, here's a resource if you need us.
Awesome. Michelle, what are some of the best ways that folks can get in touch with you?
My website is www.slweightcounseling.com. So I'm in Salt Lake. So S as in Salt, L as in Lake, weightcounseling.com.
Awesome. I will link to it in the show notes. Michelle, thank you again for doing this. And,
thank you, Melvin.
Take good care.
You too.
Hi there. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Michelle. To be completely honest, I was a bit skeptical about whether Facebook ads would work with our field. Now, I knew that Facebook ads are pretty powerful. I've been looking at Facebook ads, studying them, how to actually do them, but I just didn't know if they would actually translate into clients. And it was really neat to hear Michelle, some of her thought processes around it and how it's benefited her and her practice. And I think more than just seeing Facebook ads as like an ad, I think that another way to look at it is when you publish really great content that can help other folks, Facebook ads just allows you to share that content on a much larger scale. And whether they convert into clients or not, it helps to serve a world that may need those, may need what you're sharing. It may brighten their day, or it may make a significant impact in their life. Show notes to today's episode can be found at sellingthecouch.com/session and the number 78. As we wrap up again, I just wanted to take a moment to thank the folks at Therapy Partner for supporting today's podcast session. Therapy Partner is an all-in-one private practice management software, and I wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about their billing feature because I know that billing is an aspect that many of us can struggle with. So Therapy Partner is a little bit unique in that, well, first of all, the thought of needing credit card readers or things or readers that you sticked on your smartphone, all of that stuff goes away. You also don't need to worry about tracking things through like paper billing or anything like that. Instead, all of it is stored online. You're able to bill for copays, for partial payments, for full client balances. One of the really neat things is that you can actually store multiple types of payment or multiple methods of payment per client, and then you can switch between them just with the click of a few buttons, which makes it super easy. It allows you to log cash and check and insurance payments and all of that all within the program, so you're not feeling overwhelmed trying to track all of that, especially when you start to have, as your practice starts to get much bigger. And it automatically sets it up with your bank so that anytime you do receive payments, those funds are directly deposited into your account quickly. Definitely check them out at sellingthecouch.com/therapy partner if you are thinking about a private practice management software. If you've heard a couple of the sessions of STC, one of the recommendations that folks often have is try to start with electronic records as opposed to manual ones as soon as you can. So Therapy Partner is definitely a great option to check out. Thank you again for taking the time to listen to today's podcast episode. I hope that it has been beneficial for you and helps you start to think about some of the ways that you can start to use Facebook ads. If you have questions about boosting and Facebook ads, and if all of that seems overwhelming, please come over to the Selling the Couch community. We're at sellingthecouch.com/community. We're quickly growing, approaching 1,900 members now as I record this episode, and we would love to support you. Take good care. Have a great week. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy, and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcastingworkshop.